This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Human trafficking is a crime that is difficult to spot. Its victims are ordinary people. Many are young. And much of this trafficking is occurring right under our noses. North Carolina is in the top 10 states in the number of trafficking reports, and Charlotte is the hotspot. Our city's location, close to interstates between Atlanta and New York, our proximity to a major airport, and in the hub of major sports, all adds up to making us a very attractive location for human traffickers. There's a new North Carolina law that makes this a more serious felony, and there are local groups offering training to help recognize at-risk youth and help with early intervention. And we're going to explore all of this with some of the people involved in those efforts. Heather Johnson is Director of Individual Advocacy at the Council for Children's Rights and a member of the Charlotte Metropolitan Human Trafficking Task Force. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning. She's in our Spirit Square studio along with Sarah Burns, an attorney for Moore and Van Allen, also a member of the Charlotte Metropolitan Human Trafficking Task Force. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you. And joining us by phone is Shauna Pagano, Mecklenburg County Project No Rest Coordinator. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook, where we're broadcasting on Facebook Live today, or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Heather, we've talked about Charlotte and about Charlotte being a hot spot for human trafficking in the past. But for those who missed that conversation, let's talk about that for a second. We're in the top 10 cities, I think, in America. And that's because a lot of this goes and it could be more because a lot of this goes unreported or underreported, correct?
Exactly. Victims are rarely able to self-report due to the fear and the threats and the severe abuse that they are experiencing at the hands of the trafficker. So we don't know an actual number, but due to various reasons that I believe Sarah is prepared to talk about, Charlotte is a hub for human trafficking.
How long has this been going on, Sarah?
Human trafficking has been in existence since the beginning of time.
That's
we are
true.
Doing a much better job. I give a lot of credit to law enforcement for improving their detection of this problem. But as Heather mentioned, it is so hard to detect and statistically quantify. You know, it sounds as though there's a lot of interest in numbers and why is Charlotte such a hub and, you know, all of that. And one thing I'll caution about is a lot of those statistics are based on polling, and there's a wonderful organization that's headquartered in Washington, D.C. called the Polaris Project, and they try to identify sort of the hotspots for trafficking, but a lot of their data rests on hotline calls, so calls into their 1-800 number of a citizen, you know, someone in law enforcement or service provision that's identified what they think is a trafficking situation. So when we look at these numbers and we say, you know, North Carolina is 8 or 10, a lot of that is based on hotline calls, which suggests to me that perhaps we're just a really aware community and that we're doing a good job of identifying this and calling into those numbers. So that's my caution. But I will tell you, Shauna, Heather, myself, and all the other service providers and advocates in our community can tell you for sure that this is a significant problem in Charlotte and, of course, in North Carolina.
And you have to know the hotline number. I didn't know there was a
hotline
number.
There is a hotline number.
And how do people who are victims of this or people who think they've witnessed something like this, how would they know to call that number? I mean, this seems to be not well publicized.
Well, thanks to you, the media and other media sources like yourself are paying a lot of attention to this. And that's a lot of the work that the Metropolitan Human Trafficking Task Force and the other advocacy agencies in Charlotte and North Carolina are doing or trying to get the word out to the public. If you know, I'm sure you've heard, if you see something, say something, just kind of creating a more educated community. And then also a focus I know for the task force is educating those institutions and people that most often intersect with either victims or potential victims. So we engage in a lot of training on victim identification and best practices in victim support and referral. And we try to focus on, you know, for example, we've done some trainings for the ER physicians and nurses, hotel and motel workers, the entire Department of Social Services caseworkers, law enforcement, judges and lawyers, court personnel, school counselors. It's it's so important to target, again, those institutions and those people who will come across perhaps a trafficking victim or a potential victim.
So these victims, the perpetrators and the victims, let's talk about them for a second. If we're a hotspot because of our airport and our intersection with all these interstate highways or our proximity to them and the fact that we're close to Atlanta, we're not too far from Washington, and we're on the highway to New York and Boston and places to the north. Are these people the victims being bused, trucked, flown into Charlotte for whatever people are using them for? Because it's not all sex. It's other things as well. But are they being bused and trucked into here, or are they plucking people off our streets in Charlotte?
It's both. They are bringing victims in for specialized events, Panther games, NASCAR, other professional sports, but a lot of the victims that we are seeing and interacting with are children in foster care, children that are homeless, children that are living here in Charlotte.
Shauna, you are, as I said, Mecklenburg coordinator for Mecklenburg County Project No Rest. What is Project No Rest?
Project No Rest is a North Carolina statewide initiative that is funded federally and is being coordinated by a group out of UNC Chapel Hill School of Social Work. And the goals are to better address human trafficking in North Carolina. They also have a large PSA campaign that has provided commercials, radio commercials, Facebook posts, and a lot of what they're doing is data collection, as well as just developing a toolkit of resources for communities. Part of Project No Rest was to implement trafficking service or anti-trafficking services in communities throughout North Carolina, and Mecklenburg County was chosen as one of those communities.
Yeah, there are five pilot areas, and Mecklenburg County is one of them.
There's five pilot sites covering 17 counties. Mecklenburg County is one of them. It's being the lead agency is Pat's Place Child Advocacy Center. And then they hired me as the coordinator to basically implement whatever our community really needs in terms of trafficking services and coordination of services.
As I understand it, Project No Rest around the state is trying to identify, and these are your words, these are very official words, identify capacity, resources, and gaps in the service delivery system. If we are a top 10 city, and we've been in that position for a while, we must understand the scope of the problem. And if we know that, why are there still gaps in service?
Honestly, we don't know the scope. We know that it's a problem in Charlotte. We know that we have the largest problem in, you know, as far as cases in North Carolina, but we don't know, we can't quantify that at this point. And that's one of the goals of this project is to quantify that problem and to really understand, because we have agencies in Charlotte, but we still are lacking some services, particularly when it comes to bed space. And it's just such a hard problem to quantify that once we have some really solid numbers, we'll be able to really explain the gap between our resources and what our capacity currently is and what our trafficking looks like in Charlotte. In addition, we have agencies that are serving victims from other areas of the country. So they're not necessarily being trafficked here, but maybe they're receiving services here. And so we need to account for that, too, to understand what our capacity needs to be.
I think maybe some people are having difficulty understanding this because this is pretty much an invisible crime to most people out there, unless you're a victim or you've actually witnessed this or you have used the services of somebody who has been trafficked. It's invisible. So on the one hand, Sarah, you're telling me this is an enormous problem and probably underreported, and we know that we have this enormous problem, and yet Shauna is saying we can't quantify it.
That's right. You know, it might be helpful to just sort of take a step back and define what human trafficking is. Mike, you asked a great question about, you know, is this sort of what we're picturing, you know, say young women, for example, being brought up in the trunk of a car from Florida and up through Charlotte. Certainly that mobility exists, but under the law, that mobility is not required. So Let me just define human trafficking. I'll give a very simple kind of hybrid definition of both state and federal law. As you had alluded to, human trafficking is divided into two categories. Mm-hmm. The first being sex trafficking, and that is inducing someone to engage in commercial sex by either force, fraud, or coercion, or importantly, if that person is a minor under the age of 18. So in other words, forced or coerced prostitution or causing a minor to be prostituted. The second category is labor trafficking, as you had mentioned, and that's just very generally subjecting another person to involuntary servitude. So all the organizations that we're talking about support victims and try to identify trafficking situations that fall under either of those categories. So as you said, it is very hard to statistically quantify or detect, as Heather had mentioned, because victims don't present as they do for other crimes. As Heather said, they don't self-report. That's the very nature of this crime. It is psychological abuse to such a degree that the victims sometimes don't even know that they're victims of something.
Right.
Sort of from my perspective, I do pro bono legal services for victims of human trafficking, and they most often, in my experience, first interface with law enforcement as perceived criminals themselves. So they come into our offices and say, I've got a criminal record. I'm interested to see if it's eligible for expunction. I was forced to engage in that criminal activity as part of the experience of being trafficked, and this isn't just prostitution, it's other criminal activity. So that's a lot of the work that we do for victims, but it just goes to show you how distorted it can look when they first interface with the institutions that we're hoping do a better job of identifying what's really, really going on. So that's another reason why it's just so hard to detect. And also, it is, as I know you've heard, it's one of the sort of the top three crimes, drugs and illegal firearms in this country. And that's because the perpetrators see this as so much more lucrative than, say, drugs. Once you use a drug, it's gone. You can use a human over and over again.
I read that yesterday, that this is on its way to being a bigger problem than illegal gun trafficking and illegal drug trafficking. I mean, that's enormous. The drug trafficking in this country is astronomical. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that this is on the way to eclipsing that?
Well, if you think about it, there's sort of nothing really to cover up if you're talking about a human. By force, fraud, or coercion, or if it's a child, you can silence a human. There's no crack pipe to hide. The activity can also be covered up if we're talking about maybe labor trafficking, but by what looks to be a legitimate business, whether that's in agriculture or in a massage parlor or hair braiding parlor or even what can look like a normal human relationship, a man and a woman in a car. Nothing sort of strikes you as criminal when you see that. So I see why it's quickly coming,
right,
going to become number one.
So, Heather, you're the director of the Council for Children's Rights. When children get caught up in this, how are they being caught up? What activities are they being coerced or forced into doing most often?
It can be various activities, but mainly it is the actual sex acts. The trauma and the abuse that they are suffering really impacts their cognitive ability. So they're not able to recall events or details, which aids in the difficulty of getting them the services and resources that they need to heal and to leave that life. And they suffer from Stockholm syndrome. So they will identify with and may protect their trafficker. And as Sarah said, they might not know that they're a victim, and they may honestly believe that this trafficker is their boyfriend. So they're very reluctant to get services or resources or to help law enforcement or other service providers understand what they need.
It's like the perfect storm,
at
least for the perpetrator. It all comes together to their advantage. Heather Johnson is the Director of Individual Advocacy for the Council of Children's for Children's Rights. Sarah Burns, an attorney, and both of them are members of the Charlotte Metropolitan Human and Trafficking Task Force, and we're coming back in just a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bojangles, celebrating 40 years in Charlotte with 5 biscuit combos featuring the Bojangles made-from-scratch buttermilk biscuits, available all day, every day at area Bojangles. And SunTrust, private wealth management teams of local advisors help look beyond the portfolio, preparing clients for whatever life brings. Confidence starts here. Details at SunTrust.com/reserve. Our state is one of the top states in the country for solar energy capacity, and after months of work and compromise, Governor Cooper just signed into law sweeping legislation supporting solar energy. But the law sets up a competitive bidding system for utility-scale projects and comes with a controversial moratorium on wind energy. So we look at the possible impact of this new law and get an update on other alternative energy products projects tomorrow on this program at 9.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the Next On Point, Republicans and the President on Charlottesville on their bigger agenda. Can this political marriage be saved? That's coming up on the Next On Point from NPR.
Stay tuned for On Point from 10 till noon, following Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about a significant problem in North Carolina and particularly in Charlotte, and that would be human trafficking. It's almost invisible to most people, and we'll talk more about who the victims are, who the perpetrators are, and what the impact of all this is, and help that's being trying to be organized in this area for increasing the capacity to deal with this. Heather Johnson is here, as I said, from the Charlotte Mecklenburg Human Trafficking Task Force, along with Sarah Burns, also on that task force, and Shauna Pagano, coordinator for Mecklenburg County's Project No Rest, which stands for North Carolina Organizing and Responding to the Exploitation and Sexual Trafficking of Children. Shauna, you worked with human trafficking survivors in Thailand and Bulgaria, and now in Charlotte. There must be similarities. Are there also differences?
Yes, there are significant geographical differences. Let's say, for example, Thailand. In Thailand, there's a significant issue for child sex tourism, in which men from other countries come to the red light districts of Thailand, particularly in Bangkok and the tourist areas along the coast, and they come there specifically for the purposes of engaging in sexual acts with children. We don't see that necessarily as much in the U.S., not to say that it doesn't happen, but that's one of the primary items that I saw in Thailand. In Bulgaria, very interesting. Bulgaria is a transit country, meaning a lot of the victims, if we're talking about sex trafficking, come from Eastern Europe and down into Greece. And since Greece is on a coast, they are then shipped via water to other places throughout the world. So, yes, there are a lot of similarities, but significant geographical differences as well.
The website for Project No Rest asks an interesting question. It says, what does human trafficking look like? What's the answer?
Oh, goodness. It often looks like, if we're talking about youth, it often looks like maybe a youth with a behavior problem. And that's what oftentimes our youth get categorized as. If they have a behavior problem, they keep running away from home, they're engaging, you know, maybe they're promiscuous, they're using drugs. And what we as a society have to do is look beyond that and say, what's really going on? And realize that these young people, and I say young, traditionally in the U.S., our youth are being induced into trafficking, as far as sex trafficking goes, around the ages of 11 to 14, if you for a range there. And these youth have often experienced significant trauma in their life. Many have been abused as children. Like Heather said, many are in the foster care system. And we need to start seeing this as a true crime against these children, that these children are being abused. And we need and stop looking at them as criminals or as delinquent.
One of the problems is children who are aging out of the foster care system, but you're telling me that it's also a problem while they're in it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, there's numerous risk factors while they're in foster care and when they're aging out. And really, it's the traffickers playing on those vulnerabilities of not having a support network, of not having that family that's looking out for their best interest, of multiple moves from foster home to foster home, where the child is really feeling that sense of disconnection and lack of belonging and lack of love, and they will choose to run away to get away from that trauma of moving from home to home, and may want to stay with friends or may find themselves out on the streets. So it's those risk factors that make them vulnerable.
Is most of the trafficking that's done here sex-related, or is it employment-related, where people are forced to work in certain areas and certain conditions for no pay or low pay, et cetera?
I think what we've seen is it's mainly the sex trafficking.
Because aside from providing sexual favors, I read yesterday that some of the signs of someone caught up in this include working for very little money, someone working long or unusual hours, their work or living space features tinted windows, boarded up windows, bars on the windows. They are, as human beings, fearful or anxious or depressed or paranoid or all of those things. And they might avoid eye contact with you. Those are just some of the signals, it seems to me. But those could be signals of a lot of different situations. So as an ordinary person walking down the street, and if I saw somebody like this or saw a location like this, would I recognize it? What would set the alarm bells off?
Shauna, I'll defer to you on that. Project No Rest is doing a wonderful job of developing and pushing out a screening tool here in Charlotte that focuses on all of these indicators and gives them weights and all of that. So, Shauna, would you mind highlighting a few of the indicators that the project focuses on?
Sure. And Sarah, are you referring to our West Coast screening tool or the one that we're implementing that we refer to as the Florida screening tool?
Well, either. And are there overlapping indicators that would be worth highlighting?
Absolutely. So we have, the Charlotte community has implemented a screening tool for youth, and it's supposed to be used with youth that are 10 and over. And anybody who is a frontline worker that works or interacts with youth is supposed to be implementing this tool, and they look for very different indicators. Some are, does this youth, if we're talking about sex trafficking, does this youth use language that's associated with exploitation? Because in the world of commercial sexual exploitation, there is a language that is adopted. And you wouldn't know that unless you familiarize yourself, educate yourself about what that language is. So that's why education is such a big piece. But other things on the identification tool would be, a lot of times with youth, if they have motel keys in their possession, they have multiple phones that you're like, how do they afford that? They have some jewelry that maybe they can't afford, some drugs that it doesn't seem like they should be able to afford. That's often a sign that they could be being exploited. Some of the other indicators that are on the screening tool include previous abuse in the home, foster care involvement, some other, risky type behaviors. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the youth is being exploited, but just that that it's something, they're at high risk, and it's something that maybe we need to look for and maybe put some preventive services in place. Again, like you said, for adults, if they're working, like you said, I think you listed some really great indicators there as far as if they're working and it's just something, they're not being compensated in a fair way, or they're really long hours, or, sometimes I know this maybe not necessarily in Charlotte, but a lot of our agriculture within North Carolina, there's people that, are living all together, and they're just not getting the health and the high health care that they need and the medical care that they need. And but there's just a lot of indicators, and there's no one indicator that's ever going to say, yes, this person is being trafficked. But I think it's one of those things where if something in your gut says something's wrong here, if you're in the, I'm not saying to investigate it yourself, but maybe call the national hotline and they report it to our law enforcement, who can then investigate if something just seems off, that feeling that you have inside that something's just not right here.
We'll put that national hotline number up on our website at WFAE.org, but it is, you give it out, Sarah, because I'm not sure which of those telephone numbers is the right one.
It's 1-888-373-7888. 1-888, and that is the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, which is operated by the Polaris Project.
Okay, 888-373-1888, and we'll put it up on our website. But these people, particularly agricultural workers or workers in general who are being trafficked, who's hiring them? And are the people hiring them aware, necessarily, that they're being trafficked, or they're just getting a great deal? I mean, are these people being hired directly to be maids, to be cooks, to be agricultural workers by farmers, by restaurateurs, by people who have large homes and they need a maid? Or are they being subcontracted out? I, as a homeowner, go to somebody who has a maid service and they supply me with this person. I don't know that they've been trafficked. It's just a good deal monetarily. At least, maybe not even to me a good deal. Maybe it's not a good deal for me.
Well, I'll say as a disclaimer, I think for the three of us, most of our shared experience, as Heather had mentioned, is with regard to sex trafficking here in Charlotte.
Right.
But labor trafficking is certainly happening. And as I understand it, it's even harder to detect than sex trafficking. And here we spent, you know, the last how many minutes talking about how hard it is to detect sex trafficking. As I'd mentioned earlier, it can so easily be covered up by what looks like, you know, a legitimate business enterprise, you know, selling magazines, a group selling magazine coming to your door. There are incidents of that involving labor trafficking, agricultural work. You drive by a farm, you see the workers, everything looks the way it should look. And I'm glad you mentioned domestic work. That is, I have absolutely no knowledge of whether or not that's a problem here in Charlotte or North Carolina, but I know nationally there's been a number of federal cases actually involving diplomats coming from other countries, and their sort of customs and experience of using domestic work is quite different and in violation of U.S. law.
Is all prostitution trafficking?
I think that's a myth or a misconception. For adults, when it comes to children, yes, any sex act is absolutely human trafficking.
Okay.
When it comes to adults, I think that there's a choice there. Not always, but with children, absolutely.
And we're a good location for this, I said, because we're near an airport, we're near interstates. But why? Is that because it's easy to get people in, or it's easy to get out? Or there are a lot of people coming here who want to avail themselves of the services that these traffickers have made available?
I think it's all of that.
All of those.
I mean, they need access.
And what is the connection to the fact that we're a sports hub? We have an NBA. We have an NFL team. That's an attractive situation for traffickers. We are also a banking center, and there are a lot of conferences that come here, et cetera. That makes us attractive. You're saying that fundamentally, these people coming in here for games and conferences can avail themselves rather readily of sex trafficking services?
I think the opportunity is there. And unfortunately, for some that are looking to be a buyer of services, that it's part of just that entertainment. They're coming to town for entertainment, and unfortunately for them, that's part of their entertainment.
Does this happen in every NFL, NBA city in the country?
It must, I presume.
All right,
it must.
We just don't know. The Charlotte Metropolitan Human Trafficking Task Force, when did that come into being?
In its current form, about 4 years. As you know, it is a multidisciplinary organization that is led by the United States Attorney for the Western District of North Carolina. And we are comprised of prosecutors, law enforcement at all levels, and service providers. And that's sort of Heather and my and Shauna's kind of role on the task force, those who provide housing and health care and counseling and, in my experience, legal services to survivors of human trafficking. But it also importantly includes other stakeholders, such as the Department of Social Services. We just talked about how children in foster care and in the DSS system are particularly vulnerable to trafficking, so it's so important to have DSS at the table. The Public Defender's Office, as I had mentioned so many times, survivors of human trafficking first interface with really any institution as with criminal justice as a perceived criminal. So it's important to work with the Public Defender's Office to help us identify this. The Council for Children's Rights, as such a large child advocate center, it's of course so important to have them at the table, and Project No Rest. So we have, as I said, been in existence for, you know, about, well, a number of years, but as I said, in the current form for about 4 years, and we focus on really just two simple goals: interagency collaboration, make sure we're all talking so when law enforcement identifies a victim that has, whether it's legal services needs or a housing need, they know exactly who to call, and vice versa. And then, as I'd mentioned before, education in the community.
And you're also working on training professionals in that law enforcement and judicial system.
Correct.
What kind of training did they need? Did they need training in understanding and spotting this as a crime?
That's right, victim identification.
Why don't they? They must have significant experience with these folks. Why don't they recognize it?
Well,
why
as,
do they
as
need
we've
training?
Talked before, these victims often present as criminals themselves.
Right.
They, you know, if there's sort of an operation.
Well, you're in the business. You're an attorney.
I'm not a criminal lawyer.
No, but you're an attorney, and you recognize it. Why do people who deal with this almost every day of their lives professionally need training to recognize
well,
it?
Well, I am not in the business of identifying it and screening for it. The survivors who come and avail themselves to our legal services have already been identified either by law enforcement or a service provider that's competent to identify them, and then they come to our offices and we provide the necessary legal services.
As one of you said, this is a tale as old as time, to quote a mm-hmm. Disney movie, because this has been going on forever, and it continues to go on. Is it like playing whack-a-mole? I mean, if you find a cell of people who are involved in this activity and you take them off the street and you help the victims of this, who are the people being used by these perpetrators, does something else just crop up to take its place?
We are seeing that. I mean, this enterprise of human trafficking is so refined. There's new technology coming out that they utilize, different apps, social media, and just the very nature of it. There's always vulnerable children out there that are going to accept a friend request on social media from a stranger and may be lured in by a like on a provocative picture, and all of a sudden they can find themselves as part of that grooming and recruitment process and not be aware of it. They honestly think that this older adult is interested in them or can provide them food or shelter when they're running away or in foster care.
And I think we need to mention that this does not just affect one group of young people. It can affect almost anyone because they're young, they're impressionable, they don't know necessarily the consequences of their actions on social media, and they might, as you say, get ensnared in this just like that without even realizing what has happened to them. How could that happen to a higher-income child?
Well,
It does happen.
As I would say, children are per se vulnerable. We've talked about that existing vulnerability. They're certainly trusting of adults. Then, you know, it sort of becomes a prime target for perpetrators if we have what I call an aggravating vulnerability, whether that's, as Heather mentioned, abuse and neglect, homelessness, poverty, parental alienation, any of those other factors, and then with the ease of media to connect with people that you don't know and be lured to what appears to be a healthy and, you know, desirable relationship.
And Shauna, we have about a minute left in this segment, but we're the hotspot in the state. But the state is pretty high ranking in terms of this because of our interstates. What other areas of the state are particularly prone to this activity?
Obviously, larger cities, because larger cities are going to create that that volume of people is going to create demand. But keep in mind our agricultural areas definitely are hot spots because that facilitates some labor trafficking. And then I hate to say it, but the eastern part of the state is also going to be a hot spot because victims are shipped overseas and land in our seaports on the eastern side of our state.
Wow. Shauna Pagano, coordinator for Mecklenburg County's Project No Rest. Also with us, Sarah Burns, an attorney and a member of the Charlotte Metropolitan Human Trafficking Task Force, and Heather Johnson, a member of that task force and the director of the Council for Children's Rights. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia, featuring the new Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com and on Facebook at Tyndall Subaru. And UNC Charlotte's Cato College of Education's Graduate Certificate in Teaching programs, offering both online and class formats in middle, secondary, and special education. Details and registration at pathwaytoteaching.com. The violence in Charlottesville offered yet another example of the Republican Party and President Trump veering in different directions. While the president was slow to call out white supremacists, GOP leaders had swift condemnations. Fissures had already formed in the collapse of the health care repeal, so will they patch things up and salvage their political agenda? They'll be looking into that with Tom coming up during On Point in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, and we will continue our conversation in just a moment.
The news can shift on a dime.
In his statement on Twitter, President Trump said that the military
Senate rejected legislation to dismantle Obamacare by
142 Americans are dying every day of drug overdose. Which
when
means
it does, Morning Edition reports what we know and we chase after what we do not. We take the time for another question, to look ahead and get at what the news means right now. Stand with the facts. Listen every day.
At 90.7 WFAE and at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about human trafficking. It's a pretty serious subject, and we are the epicenter of that activity in this state. Julie on Facebook writes, "This is a men's issue. Men need to be the ones to speak out on this. They need to speak to one another on this." Would you agree with that? Certainly the sexual aspect is probably a men's issue exclusively, or probably exclusively. I'm going to put words in your mouth. What about the labor trafficking? Is that just a men's issue?
No. No, I honestly, I don't think about this much in terms of gender.
Really?
Sometimes when I think about it in terms of gender, I think, you know, we talk so much about raising our daughters. I mean, it's collectively as a community, not just parents, but raising our daughters to sort of counteract those vulnerabilities that we talk about and, you know, inspiring confidence and healthy, you know, relationships, including romantic relationships. But I don't hear a lot of talk about how we're raising our men and our boys to, you know, not only not be sort of potential traffickers, to not exploit and take advantage of people like that, but not be buyers of commercial sex.
Because if you are a buyer of commercial sex, you are an enabler. You're an enabler. You're participating in the industry.
You are, and so often not knowing. So many times, what is a perceived prostitute is a minor victim of human trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Your group is also, Heather and Sarah, your group is raising funds to train the trainers, the people who work with children and with teenagers. Are you talking about social workers and school counselors and physicians? Who are you talking about?
We're talking about all of them. So we need all child-serving professionals from all of those systems, the school system, medical professionals, social service agencies, and child advocacy groups, to be able to identify victims in at earlier stages so we can pull them from that grooming and recruitment process. In part of the training that we did in May and that we're hoping to continue through the raising of funds that the Mecklenburg Bar Association is helping us with, is being able to identify the victims as well as collecting data on the scope of the problem. And with this data collection, we will have a formalized method cross-agency and across the county to really understand what the victim needs are, the points of entry into the human trafficking world, and really track the numbers so that we can get those specialized services, legal assistance, clinical interventions, medical treatment, safe housing, food, clothing, and make sure those resources are there for the children that need them.
And you're doing this in a very modern way. You're crowdsourcing this fundraising. And on the surface, that sounds really cool and very good and very modern, et cetera. But if the problem is as significant as you say it is, and I don't doubt that it is, why do you have to resort to crowdsourcing this? If it's that important, if it affects so many people, if it's a blight on our society, if it is putting so many young people at risk, so severely at risk, why aren't their tax dollars sufficient enough to take care of this training?
We often ask ourselves that.
Well, why isn't there? Why aren't there? If the Bar Association is involved in this, there are plenty of high-powered people who are connected to the Bar Association who know how to make that happen. Why is this being crowdsourced?
There is funding out there at the federal and the state level for those that support and house and provide counseling and education regarding human trafficking. The federal government has been putting out a significant grant for probably the last decade or so, either every year or every other year, to support usually large metropolitan areas that are needing to collaborate more across agencies to support survivors. And we can talk about in a second, the General Assembly of North Carolina is really, really paying attention to human trafficking, and there is state funding as well. There is wonderful philanthropic support for human trafficking in Charlotte. But as you can tell, we're here today. We are trying to get the word out to sort of generate not, you know, just a lot of attention to this and awareness, but also support. So going to the private bar and asking for their support, of course, gets the sort of raises awareness for them, which I personally am thrilled with, because we're always looking to sort of recruit more volunteer attorneys to do pro bono legal services. So it gets the word out, but it's just, it's another way to provide funding for niche projects such as the screening tool. And training.
So do you see this as augmenting what's already there in an effort to what, increase the effectiveness of it, or to hasten the effectiveness of it? Is that how you view yourself?
Well, I think so much of what we talked about this morning is we just need to do a better job of identifying those victims, and even one step further in my mind, identify potential victims. So if we can reach as many people through, whether that's a task force training when we're talking to emergency room residents or school counselors and judges, the more people that we can touch that intersect with victims and potential victims, we're going to make a lot more progress.
So it seems to me that the people who come closest I'm completely ignorant of this. So the people who would come into closest contact with young people who are being trafficked for the purposes of sex are the Johns. And they're likely not to report this because they're the beneficiary of this practice. So how would an ordinary person recognize somebody who might be in this situation and might want to be extracted, even though they don't know they want to be extracted from it? How would you spot them? How would you help them? What would you do for them if you suspect this? Because you could be wrong.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's plenty of false reporting. Well, as Shauna had mentioned, a number of the indicators. And, you know, I think of sort of the healthcare industry, you know, there's some statistics about how often survivors have interfaced with schools and hospitals and doctor's offices mm-hmm. before they have availed themselves to services or have been correctly identified.
Shauna, talk about that.
There are reports, there is research out there that says as many as 87% of victims have come in contact with a medical professional, particularly in an emergency department. Now, these reports are dated, but anecdotally, we find that to be true. These victims are not going to be receiving primary preventive care. So what happens is they're going to report to an emergency department when they get assaulted by either a buyer or by their trafficker, or many of them have reproductive concerns, frequent urinary tract infections or sexually transmitted infections, and they're going to go to an emergency department or maybe a clinic to get that treated. And we know a significant number are reporting in that fashion.
Mm-hmm. There are two myths about child sex trafficking that you want to debunk, I know. One of them is that it only affects certain segments of the society, and two, that it's not prostitution. It is child abuse. Talk about that.
It is child abuse. Under the law, if someone is engaged in commercial sex under the age of 18, they are a per se victim of human trafficking. And, you know, we can talk about whether or not there's a perpetrator, who the perpetrator is, and all that. But under the law, they are a victim of human trafficking. And that's been the law in North Carolina since 2013, when the General Assembly passed the Safe Harbor Law that said anyone under the age of 18 could not be prosecuted for prostitution. To your first myth, that you know, there's sort of a category of people that this happens to. In my own anecdotal experience, my clients look different, come from so many different backgrounds, or just a real spectrum of different types of people. So I have not been able to glean any commonalities among them. I will say we've talked about these existing vulnerabilities, certainly drug addiction, whether or not drug addiction sort of predated the exploitation or it was part of the experience. That is a growing tactic by traffickers, is forced drug addiction and then forced withdrawal.
In other words, get them hooked.
Correct. And then if they, you know, threaten to not continue to work for them,
right,
they threaten withdrawal, which, as I understand, particularly with this opioid and heroin crisis in our country, that there is nothing more coercive than threatened withdrawal.
And isn't that what pimps have been doing forever?
Yeah.
And you want to, as you pointed out, that sometimes the first time law enforcement or the judicial system gets involved or lawyers get involved is when these children are arrested for these so-called crimes, whether it's drug possession or prostitution. You want to point out that these children are not criminals.
They are not criminals.
They are the victims here. So the person acting as the pimp is the criminal.
Absolutely.
Obviously, a person who buys the services of these, are they the criminal as well? Are the penalties for them more severe if, in fact, this is not just some person off the street they're contracting to have sex with, but it's a child, or it's that person is a victim, adult or child, of sex trafficking? Is there a different set of standards for those people?
Purchasing commercial sex,
yes,
is a violation of law when
right,
we're talking particularly about North Carolina law.
But I mean, is it worse for the person who does that if it is discovered that this person was sex trafficked or is underage?
Well, in 2013, as I mentioned, the General Assembly made a great push to improve the laws and made what we – Johns are those that purchase sex.
Yes.
Made it a second offense – for a second offense, it became a felony to purchase commercial sex. So that was an improvement. And for the pimps, it became a first – on first offense, it was a felony. So that was a big development in the increase of penalties.
This is the law that Governor Cooper signed in July. Is that what you're talking about?
No, we're talking about in 2013. But
okay,
I'm glad you brought that up. Can we talk about
sure,
sort of the recent developments?
Yeah.
As I said before, the General Assembly is really paying attention to this. I think what you're referring to is Senate Bill 4548, which largely addresses illicit massage parlors. Law enforcement for a number of years has identified that there is a huge problem of sex trafficking in illicit massage parlors and have spent a lot of resources targeting that problem. And that one, we talk about how hard this is to identify, is particularly problematic because so many of the victims in those businesses are foreign-born. So with our particularly turbulent time in immigration policy, that is an even better sort of method or tactic for traffickers, say it's owners of those massage parlors, to keep those victims working for them and not reporting or, you know, participating with law enforcement. So that bill largely increases the state's regulation of massage parlors and, you know, requiring licensure for those that work there. But importantly, and this is why I bring it up, that bill also changed the penalties for human trafficking. It changed it from for if the victim is an adult, from a Class F to a Class C, which, as you know, is increased penalties. And it changed when the victim is a minor from a Class C to a B2.
And what does that mean?
My disclaimer, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but when we talk about the sentencing guidelines, the sentencing structure, it's more time of incarceration.
Well,
evidently,
as I understand, this pimping went from being a misdemeanor to a felony in some of these cases. It surprised me that it was a misdemeanor to begin with.
Yeah.
You put forth earlier in this conversation a shocking statistic, to me at least, that this affects anybody under the age of 18 is a child, but you're talking about really children here, 12 years old, 11 years old. How young is the youngest person that you're aware of in North Carolina or in Charlotte who has been trafficked? Do you know, Shauna?
I'll be honest. I've worked with victims who were trafficked as young as 3 years old. And I know that's disgusting, but generally in those cases where they're very, very young, I find that it's a parent pimping out their child for money, drugs, to make rent. But yes, I've worked with very, very young victims.
So the Department of Social Services and CMS are partnering to teach courses about human trafficking in the 7th and 8th grade, clearly. That's a good idea. That it is needed. But are there problems in doing that? Because if you're going to teach about human sex trafficking or human trafficking of any kind, that could hit some parents the wrong way.
Oh, absolutely. But it's necessary. I mean, children need to know what makes them vulnerable and need to know that what is seemingly a normal situation of a friend request or Instagram post or something of that nature, that could be putting them in a world that they're unable to control.
So when you find somebody who is a victim, how do you help them? What happens when you find them and you pull them off the street?
I think the most important thing is building that trust and rapport. They live in a world where they are being abused daily, in a state of fear, and they can't trust anybody. They can't even trust.
They can't trust you, I would think. Do they want to be pulled off the street in many cases?
That's hard to say, but it usually takes a few times of interactions, whether mm-hmm. it be law enforcement or an advocate, before a victim is able to really understand that they are a victim or able to understand that they're in need of services and resources.
And what kinds of services are available? I guess it's age. It depends on the age of these children, but if they're coming out of the foster care system or they've been aging out of the foster care system or their parents have neglected them and they're not in the foster care system, what do you do for them? What do you do to the parents if there are parents involved?
Well, they need their basic human needs met.
Okay.
They need housing, which, you know, Shauna had mentioned. We just need more housing in Charlotte to support and to house the victims that are recovered by law enforcement. And otherwise, they need health care. We've talked about the traumatic experiences they've gone through, so they need healthcare to attend to that. They need mental health services. They need legal services. So one wonderful thing I think about how our task force has come together and all the groups in Charlotte is that we all get together, those who provide those services, and hopefully support the victims in a wraparound way.
That's Sarah Burns. She gets the last word. She's an attorney and a member of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Human Trafficking Task Force. Another member, Heather Johnson, is also the Director of Individual Advocacy for the Council for Children's Rights. And joining us by phone, Shauna Pagano, coordinator for the Mecklenburg County Project No Rest organization. And we'll put that hotline number on our website at WFAE.org.